I'm pleased to introduce Maureen Ehrenberg to the Office Space podcast. Maureen is the CEO of BlueSkyer. She is responsible for the vision, strategic direction, and growth of BlueSkyer, which is a commercial real estate facilities management, advisory, and service company dedicated to leveraging technology and decades of industry and experience. And she does have a lot of experience. She's come from CBRE, where she was the global director of facility management, then the president of global integrated facility management and international director for JLL. And prior to starting BlueSkyer, she was the global head of real estate strategic services at WeWork. Maureen, welcome to the program.
Well, great. Thank you, Dougal. I'm glad to be here.
So, Maureen, can you describe your business and how you add value to clients?
Sure. We founded our business a few years ago to bring a new model to the industry in property services. So we actually can perform full property services for regional, national, global portfolios for property or facility management. But ultimately, what we're finding is that a lot of internal teams need platforms. So we can do partial resourcing as well as more platform support resources for internal clients, particularly in the facilities area. And if that makes sense, it's anything from helping you with solar or ESG programs or helping you with engineering expertise. And then the other part of the business is really helping customers transform. So it's strategic advisory, creating target operating model, and then a very detailed execution plan on how to transform, whether it's your property tech you're using, but then also operationalizing your ESG. So your environmental, your social, and your governance programs.
Okay. Thanks for that. And how has COVID affected your business and the projects you're working on? And have you ever been through something similar to this as it affected the built environment?
The closest things that I've been through that even remotely resemble this would have been in a very, very short period of time, anything from like the Y2K preparations where everyone was waiting to see. So there was tremendous prep. And then ultimately, we all waited till midnight to see if systems shut down or the grid shut down or anything else. I'm here in Chicago. So, of course, we dealt with the major flood of all the office buildings downtown, which was absolutely incredible and unprecedented. And then I guess, you know, 9/11, which was a completely different type of response, but a very strong response that trends around building security, uptime, and access accelerated.
Right. I mean, one could argue that this being sort of an invisible disease and its, you know, longevity is a little bit more challenging, right?
Much more challenging. You know, for years and years and years, when you meet with a client and they talk to you about resiliency and uptime and emergency planning, everyone would always ask, you know, do we believe we're ready for a pandemic? And it was incredible to me the number of organizations who really did believe that they were prepared for a pandemic and what that would entail. And I just believe that the way this pandemic came on, the severity of what it brought to bear and how quickly it moved globally, it surpassed what anyone really believed would occur. And that's why so many organizations were not prepared, even though they thought potentially they were.
Right. Can you talk about some of the projects or a project that you're working on that might be interesting to the audience here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's really changed is that the pandemic changed the way organizations look at health and safety and the experience and productivity of their employees. Absolutely. Foundationally. But what also happened during that time is that I think the intense focus using video conferencing, people having the time to listen more to groups and podcasts and webinars and just becoming more aware of what was happening. It was sort of like this quiet period where people could really focus awareness around ESG and what that's about. And it actually tangentially even touches a pandemic and a response for an organization. And then also some of the other trends around workplace, remote work, everything accelerated so quickly. That what's happening now is you've got these real estate teams coming in and they've got new challenges and everything from return to office in the manufacturing space. It's different around what are they doing around environmental solar sustainability planning from logistics, what's changing there even regarding site selection and climate change. And then ultimately When organizations are looking at resiliency and uptime and how are they planning differently for return to office. So most organizations know that whatever they were doing in the past, if they just continue to do it, they're not really embracing the change that occurred during the pandemic. So most are looking right now at their operating models. And so the example I'll use is we've got several clients, very similar. They're internal groups that in the past always operated very independently. So they have global portfolios. Some are tech companies, some are manufacturing, but it's a very similar mandate and expectation with us. They're saying we now are going to be required to think about our brand, our purpose, and being much more connected. So what do we need to do that's more consistent? And then what can we continue to do locally? So we're looking at the staffing at the different sites, the technology that they're using to gather data across the portfolio rather than site by site. And then we're also looking at processes and procedures and how do they get them a little bit more consistent for data collection, reporting, and just their operations in general. So they're more consistent. So when an employee comes to a site, wherever they are around the world, they know it's that company. And they know more what to expect. And then do they have a focus on employee experience too? And what is that brand feeling? And so,
Sorry to interrupt, but when you talk about collecting data, give me an idea of what you're talking about. What kind of data are you collecting? How is it collected?
Okay. So the data ranges, and I'll make it really brief, but everything from employee SAT surveys. So if your HR team is not really collecting that facilities and real estate data, if really it's just the real estate and facilities team locally, what is the feedback they're getting from the employees regarding their experience at work, the office convenience, and then ultimately the HR data too around retention. But then the operating data. So for example, one of the groups we work with, they've had a lot of outages. And so the customer at several sites, they just kept having tons and tons of equipment outages and alarms going on in the middle of the night. And so in looking and just doing an assessment, it was because they had value engineered a lot of the ventilation out of their closets. And so the equipment was overheating. And so who had put that in was their tech group. And the tech group really hadn't been talking to the facilities group who hadn't really been, you know. So what their operating model is now working more closely together between, let's say, HR and IT or facilities and IT, and then creating that roadmap to connect the dots differently. So for most organizations and the organizations that we're working with, they're creating a new blueprint. It really is a new blueprint, the way they operate. And so, again, looking at people, process, technology, how would they relook at recasting the way they're working and then putting a roadmap in? What can they get done year one, year two? Many of those projects, though, are also related to the environmental impact in ESG.
And what size and scale would it make sense to engage your organization to help them?
We work with small and mid-sized companies all the way up to some of the largest global companies you can imagine, particularly in the tech and manufacturing space. So it's not so much the size and scale, particularly when it comes down to strategy and operations, but as far as supporting a group is providing platform resources to be an extension of their team, we're usually much more geared toward smaller global firms or national firms or mid-sized firms, but not for a massive organization, unless we're acting as an integrator across their service providers.
Okay. And I heard you mention solar a couple of times. What goes into in instituting, you know, procuring all the things around solar? Seems on the surface like there's just a lot of providers. Would you vet all those out, help with determining what the best provider is and those sort of things?
Yeah, well, our role is like an owner's representative. So we're an extension of the owner's team. And so we've done everything from, we work with a group that wanted to put more renewable energy across their sites and looking at it for them. Yes, wind is an option. They're looking obviously at electric vehicle charging. There are a lot of components. The solar is their biggest investment because they're looking at solar roofs and other panels they're installing. So what we did is they had brought some partners in actually. So the first thing was just creating awareness. Like you realize if you're just letting them use your roof, that's not, you're just a landlord there, you're collecting rent. They weren't aware of that. They thought they were going to get full credit for putting solar up. So everything from that to then saying, well, if you want to do you know, power purchasing agreements, that's going to be a little bit more intense, but you will get the credit. When they check with their ownership, that's exactly what they wanted to do. So then helping them prioritize and identify across all of their sites around, this was in the US, which sites would be the first priorities they should look at because they have the largest roofs, the best solar load, the right tenant mix, because maybe they can sell more directly to the tenants and not have to go just to the grid, because timing to market was important too. So really being a strategist and then helping them. So we're very neutral when it comes down to what providers they want to use, but not all equipment is the same either. So from an operations perspective, just because it's solar doesn't mean it's good. And just because it's solar doesn't mean it's going to last as long as they think. So then also just assessing what's the quality of the installation and then reading the solar leases, if they are doing leases, just to make sure that they're not exposing themselves to huge cost risk with very little reward. So we can just really help hold their hand as they go through and implement a small project or a very large project.
Great. What are some of the trends you're seeing in property operating expenses?
In the property expenses for the last several years, one was obviously containment when a lot of the operators realized they didn't have a lot of control over their contracts. So they had signed fixed contracts, and even though no one was in the buildings, they were still paying all the bills for food service or whatever. So there has been a real push to renegotiate those contracts. So while for many years people wanted guaranteed pricing and they thought that was to their advantage, unfortunately, the guaranteed pricing came back to haunt them during the pandemic because that, you know, this provider had taken the risk and then they were reaping the reward. So people are moving more towards more flexible contracts where they can, they're going to be exposed for on the demand side. If it goes up, they're going to pay it, but the best part is they can also flex and pay less. So that's on the contracting side, just in the expenses in general, intense focus on utility spend and then also carbon. So look, a big focus on zero carbon. People are looking at waste differently as well, because again, that's all part of that sustainability cycle. So relooking at their waste removal contracts, can they aggregate? What's their cost? What are they paying? How much are they sending to landfill? Getting more transparency. We talked about data. That type of data is very important right now, as well as occupancy data and understanding how many people are at the site. And so how do their costs per square foot in operations relate to the occupancy at the site and getting better data around occupancy real time? So there's a downward pressure right now for sure on operating costs. We haven't really seen as much of that. This is, I think, due just to the economic situation. People were tending to spend a little bit more money because of employee experience and bringing amenities. And while cost is always a focus in facilities, there's a renewed focus right now on trying to reduce cost and defer cost and actually look if there's any way to even not incur cost. So cost avoidance is a big topic right now.
Okay. And do you see any trends by industry or regions or countries?
Yes. So most of the world in the countries that have been focusing, for example, on climate change for quite a long time, look to the U.S. as early innings as far as what we're doing in our response and what we're doing in property operations. So in the U.S. right now, much of it is new. So there's everything from when I talk about the target operating models. One of the most important things that customers are doing today is trying to figure out, rather than what they've done in the past, which was like treating energy and sustainability as sort of like the side project that these experts were dealing with, they're really operationalizing these initiatives. So everything from diversity and inclusion in their contractors and the people that they use, that they subcontract to include more and more diverse slate of suppliers, all the way down to using more technology to manage the workflows and understand how long people are spending on site. And so the U.S., I would say the operationalizing of ESG and looking at all of these drivers has been something that's been much more mature in Europe and in some parts of Asia. There's a bigger focus on construction right now. It's starting now here in the U.S., obviously, with captured carbon and what materials are being used. Starting to see lenders here in the U.S. starting to look at that as far as financing. And then ultimately, there's been a lot of research. This is global on the social impact and value of properties. And so as a result, you know, again, if you look at the UK and you look at Europe, they're way advanced in what they've been doing as far as a lot of the sustainability initiatives and social impact initiatives. However, what's probably at the same point across most of the regions is this sort of grouping around looking at how do you value properties differently. So for example, if a property has created more, let's say, flex offerings with space, so it's more consumable and flexible. They've got a great tenant base in the building, but they've also got great initiatives around energy, impact with the local community, the way they've measured and captured the carbon emissions, and just how they're kind of controlling that asset. They believe that, and there's a paper coming out right now by the International Value Standards Institute on the fact that those properties should be valued higher. And so even lenders are talking about looking at two scenarios for an asset. It's ROI and ROI, but one is return on investment and the other is return on impact. And so they're looking at the impact of assets, where those assets sit. Is there a positive halo effect for the asset? So that creates a little higher value. Or is the asset actually causing issues around people having to move out of a community because it's just pressed high, you know, value so high that people can't afford to live there? And then what are they doing in order to create opportunities for people for jobs? And just looking at the whole impact of that asset. So it's a much broader scrutiny than mm-hmm. we've seen in the past on property values.
Hmm. So it sounds like a kind of the next level of like the LEED and certification and all that, how it's really integrated in the community. And when you talk about a higher valuation, I mean, that might lead to certain benefits on lower taxes then?
Correct. Lower taxes and even sale. If you go to sale, if you go to market, because there are funds that are actually focusing on, you know, some funds are looking to say, well, how can I create, you know, like a value creation? But some are saying, if in my portfolio of assets, and I look across my entire portfolio of investments, if I have a lot of investment, let's say properties that are creating maybe more emissions, and then I've got some residential, but I don't have a lot of like workforce housing, and I haven't really invested with whether it's, you know, kind of assets that create value like timber, you know, and woodlands and things like that, they will look at mixing, kind of changing the mix of the investments and also looking at those values. So, and what could they do to possibly increase value through bringing some of these initiatives in like zero carbon? So it's, to me, I believe that it's, they're completely connected regardless of what region you are in the world, because it's almost like a clock. If you think of the world as a clock, a property clock, you know, if you start at noon being the most advanced and one being the least advanced, and you kind of work your way around the clock, you could create a clock that would show, you know, US, we might be 3 or 4, you know, Germany, the UK, they might be at like 7 or 8. And you could literally map countries around the world and show where they are on this maturity index as far as the advancement of some of these initiatives. And then you'd probably have to break it down a little bit. But frankly, right now, the link between what's going on in property operations and facilities, so all of those trends you and I were talking about, and why are people doing it? And they're not doing it because it's cool, you know, because it is cool. They're really doing it because on the investor side and on the corporate side, the changes with SEC on the reporting, the changes in new requirements from lenders, they're realizing that, you know, accountability, transparency to some of these pieces of data like zero carbon, like your tenant profiles, what you've done on impact, those types of metrics are going to be very important. And if they're not actually baked into the way you operate, you're constantly going to be chasing these things and you really haven't institutionalized it. And that's why they're resetting the way they operate. So it just becomes the new way you work and the new way you run things. And the new way you kind of look at everything from site selection to dispositions.
Right. And you can help them quantify those spends or quantify the return on investment for that.
Yes, we can help quantify that. We can help them put a strategy together to approach ESG. Mm-hmm. We can help them prioritize. So this goes back to one of the key things we focus on is we look at helping you digitize the way you operate through different techs that are very affordable, that are more off the shelf SaaS systems that can integrate all the way down to the ESG, where we can take a whole portfolio of initiatives that you might have, But then we can use pairwise comparisons. It's actually our algorithm that we've built that will filter all the projects and then push up the ones that will have the highest return for you, where you'd put your capital first. And then the ones that on paper might look great, but when they're compared against your issues and your goals for your organization, and then this whole mix of projects you have, they force rank which are probably the lowest return for you, or which will have the most, the least benefit to your organization.
Okay.
And then
okay.
you can execute from there.
Great. And have you seen any game-changing technology? I had Aaron Block, who's the co-founder of Metaprop. It's a property tech fund out of New York, on recently. And he was talking about some of the property tech investments that they're getting involved with. And it's really all over the board. And there's just so many opportunities, it seems, to streamline the process, make things better. Have you seen any game changer technologies associated with facility management that you can speak to?
Yeah. The biggest breakthrough technologies, I believe, are the systems right now. And we're seeing also a lot of consolidation in the prop tech space and facilities. It's highly acquisitive right now. And I think you always see that when you've got a really fragmented market. And you can look at anything from, you know, equipment controls all the way down to maintenance management systems. And what's happening is people are aggregating end-to-end processes. So some of the service providers are doing this, and then some of the offerings are doing it. Like there's companies like Facilio, you look at NTouch and what they're doing, but these are groups that what they can do is create almost an automated operation of a building. So for example, if you've got engineers, you know, if you think about service requests when they come into a building, it's a much more advanced version of the old systems where you'd have like, you know, you'd have like the big buildings where you had a building operating center in the middle, and then they would look at some of the equipment, how it's performing. They could dispatch engineers across the building. So these systems give you all those points and you can actually see a screen of the performance management. But what's advanced is that also the vendor community and that marketplace is integrated. So it's not just the equipment you can see, but you can now begin to see what vendors are there, who's available. You can look if you've got a whole portfolio of sites, dispatching, who's responding, the time of response, and you can even close out your work orders and process bills through that and send them to your payables group. So what that does is it creates virtual networks that you can run quite a large portfolio with much less people resources. And so we're highly focused in that area because we think it's the future. And you're beginning to also see some of the integrated workplace management solutions. So IWMS systems, for anyone who's familiar with those, you're starting to see them line up with some of the building equipment manufacturers. And so you can go everything from, if they all line up, if you're manufacturing equipment, installing it in a building, and they're linked up with a space planning system to see all the space, how it's laid out, the MEP system. And then over that, you can overlay the occupancy. And then over that, you can overlay the predictive and preventive maintenance. And then you can kind of plug in live data from the building. If you can imagine, you've got an entire dynamic operating ecosystem. So years ago, when we talked about that, it was all, oh boy, when is that ever going to happen? And today it's becoming more and more of a reality, but it's not one. The thing is, though, it's not one system. It still is. You've got to link together a few of the different processes, and then they integrate. Most of them have open APIs, or you can use BackNet. You can connect these systems. RealCom is really doing an amazing job. I don't know if anyone who's following RealCom and what they're doing. We just had a conference recently, but they're great at bringing together on the investor community side for property management, as well as on the corporate side, some of the leading technologies and some of the leading investors and occupiers who are deploying them, and they're sharing best practices. So what is happening is these investment funds are accelerating the investment and then buying the pieces they need and putting them together. So I predict that, one, it's going to be far more affordable. But what is not still not there is there's a huge difference between IT, so information technology, and OT, operations technology. And one of the biggest hurdles I'm seeing right now with clients, and it's human nature, is that very often you'll have an IT group saying, well, we've been IT, so we should be deploying all of this facility software and all these facility prop tech tools. But the problem is, if you don't know how to operate buildings, you can make a lot of mistakes. So everything from even using ServiceNow to deploy all of your work requests and then knowing where to route those and how they get responded to. So one of the most important learnings, I would say, from most clients and groups we work with is there's a real need to understand the difference between operations technology and information technology, and then those two groups cooperating with each other because they both need each other. But you need to bring kind of one different skill set in so you're all understanding. Right. Or you could spend a ton of money and your systems won't work.
Right.
That's all. Or they're not optimized.
It kind of reminds me, I brought my car into the dealership the other day, and the car is basically now, it's an Audi, and it's got all technology in it. And I just was talking to the mechanic guy. I'm like, what's happening to all these older mechanics that were dealing with all these different things? Now you have a whole new crop of people. And he's like, yeah, you've got these young people who don't want to talk to anyone, but are really good on the tech side, but don't really know anything about cars. And then you got these old timers who really know how a car works and all these sort of things. And they're trying to integrate it together.
That's exactly. And I think it's across business. So while this is unique to real estate and facilities, car manufacturing, telecom. And so bringing those two areas of expertise together, you get a better solution because they need each other. They really do.
All right. Well, this has been great. I appreciate your time. And I look forward to seeing what other kind of projects you're working on in the future. And I'm glad that you're part of the Colliers family now.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. And we love being part of Colliers. And Dougal, thank you so much for your time today.